When I was at school, I wanted to do two things, either join the army or join the police. My mum and dad, they didn't particularly want me to join the army, so that never happened. And if anyone's watching this, just don't listen to your parents, just do what you want to do. Because I always thought, for daily, you know, the sort of like the hello geezer sort of car salesman. And I thought, I'm not sure. We struggled, really, really struggled. We had no choice but to really close the dealership, which was very difficult at the time because I was there, now we're talking 14 years, and it all sort of went. But he was on holiday. So he sort of knocked on the door with his lunchbox. And I said, I'm really sorry, but it's shut.
Hi everyone, you're listening to the Unrelenting Drive podcast. And before we get into today's episode, I just wanted to let you know, I started this podcast because over the years, I've had hundreds of the most inspiring conversations of my life with small business owners. And they really helped me grow and scale my own business and get my mindset right, even when times were really tough. I wanted to capture those conversations and make them available to other small business owners who are following in my footsteps. And I've just got a small request. If you enjoy this episode, if you find it really inspiring, if you find it helps you in your own business, then please just like it and subscribe to our YouTube channel. The more subscribers we get, the more we can invest in making the podcast better. So enjoy the episode. Hello everyone, it's Nishi here and I'm delighted to be joined by Scott Norville from Silverstone Leasing. Scott, thank you so much for joining us today on the podcast. Could you please tell the audience what you do?
Yeah, well firstly, thanks for inviting me today. It's a pleasure being here. I've watched a lot of your podcasts recently. So I run a leasing company based in Northampton called Silverstone Leasing. We're solely a credit provider, so we provide the credit and the credit facilities for businesses and personal individuals for cars and vans.
Oh, amazing. So do you work with people that actually own the vehicles and then you manage do you actually find people the vehicle as well?
Or? Yeah, so we source, we outsource for the vehicles, but primarily we use our funding partners. So we've sort of, for example, Lex Auto Lease, Arval, Alphabet, some of the names you may have heard of, they're our funding partners. We look after the customer with sort of special offers maybe, stock offers, but we utilise the finance systems and that's what we provide our customers. And then combined with that, we've got facility, procurement facility, which has got all of the cars, 42 different manufacturers on there.
Oh, wow. Okay.
So, and we can just pluck any sort of car. So we do it all. We're like a broker as such, a sort of credit broker.
Oh, excellent. Okay. Yeah. And how long have you been doing that?
12 years.
Okay.
So we've been doing it long enough and I've sort of explained it in a bit of a roundabout way, but it's a sort of fairly simple thing is what we do. We do things in a very different way. We're very sort of customer oriented. We just do things in a very different way and have fun as well doing it.
And how big's your team?
That's a good question. So probably about last month or the month before, it's probably about 13. But two members of the team have gone to pastures new.
Okay.
So with our mentor, so I've got a mentor currently, which I've had for seven years. And my accountant, which actually is my wife, Sophie.
Okay.
That she's come on board. We've got a team of 12.
Yeah, oh, excellent. That's
10, I think. Sorry, 10. I think it's a team of 10. I always get confused. Yeah, it's about 10.
It's a good-sized team. It'd be really good to get into that later on in the podcast. And I think a really good starting point, so people can just understand your background a bit more and your skill set, is how did you get from leaving education into work? And then let's talk about how you got from work to running your own business.
So when I was at school, I wanted to do two things, either join the army or join the police. My mum and dad, they didn't particularly want me to join the army, so that never happened. And if anyone's watching this, just don't listen to your parents, just do what you want to do. But anyway, so I went along the lines then of the police, but in a roundabout way, I loved art and design and graphic design. So I did a GMVQ at Northampton School for Boys, which is only down the road from here. And I did that in graphic design, GMVQ graphic design, and I loved it. So to be honest, I really didn't know what I wanted to do. And I wanted to be in the police, but then equally, I wanted to do graphic design. I just sort of, I don't know. It was just back then. I don't think anyone really knows what they wanted to do. So I did sixth form. I finished that. A lot of my friends went to university. And to be honest, that didn't really sort of float my boat, uni. I prefer sort of hands-on work. And that really didn't sort of, like I said, it didn't really sort of appeal to me as such. Not only that, I don't think I probably would have had the grades to do it anyway, let's be completely honest. So I left school. I worked at my dad's factory for 2 weeks. He had a factory in Moulton, which he still does. Bratmills. It's Bratmills now, but it was a factory in Moulton.
What did you produce?
Filters, air filters. So
for vehicles?
Yeah, for vehicles. All right. So you may have heard Pipercross air filters, may not have done, but...
Potentially, yeah.
It was a performance air filter and filters for buses. But there was an opportunity to work there for a couple of weeks, just to earn a little bit of cash in between when I'm trying to work out what I'm going to do after sixth form. And the 2 weeks ended up 2 years. I was finding that the money that I was earning, even though it was it wasn't a lot, it was a lot more than my friends that were in uni. So when my friends used to come back from uni, there was me with a little bit of cash and everything. And I thought, actually, this is probably the best way to go for me personally. But I knew that working in a factory, I just need a little bit more. I need to do something else. And I really wanted to do sales. And I just, where I was working, there was a lot of salespeople there, and I just looked at their company cars. I looked at how they were dressed. I looked at how they were sort of coming in the morning, sort of early, and just how they were presented. And I was working in the factory. Don't get me wrong, it was great learning the trade as such in a factory. But I was mucky, I was dirty, and I just wanted to do something different. And I just loved dealing with people. So I really didn't know how to go about it. So within the organisation at my dad's company, there was an opportunity to be in sales. Mm. But the issue is, they didn't want me to be in sales because I was obviously my father's son, and my father owned it. And they didn't want me to sort of muck about with
when
the train set.
When you say they, do you mean your father didn't, or the rest of the business?
No, it was more the management team. They didn't want me to be knowing what was not going on. But this was, you know, we're talking, how long are we talking now? Early 90s, I would have said. So these are the days we used to go to the pub on a Friday, you know, and it was just a whole different element. You
I
know?
Miss those days.
Yes, so do I. but it was a whole different working life. But anyway, the opportunity wasn't there. So what it was, there was a gentleman there, and his brother worked at a Hyundai car dealership based in Northampton called Hyundai, Orchard Hyundai. And he said to me, he said, look, my brother is the general manager there. Would you like me to see if there's any jobs going as a trainee? Because I expressed my sort of interest that I really wanted to be in sales. Car sales, well, I wasn't too sure about car sales because I always thought after daily, you know, the sort of like the hello geezer sort of car salesman. And I thought, I'm not sure I really want to get involved in
anything. There are quite a lot of stereotypes at that point kicking around.
Heavily. You know, sheepskin coats and gold necklaces.
No, I'm thinking of the TV series White Gold.
Yeah, exactly that, but for cars, not windows. Anyway, cut a long story short, he got me an interview, and I went for the interview, and I was extremely nervous. And I remember sitting there, and I sort of just literally just sat there, 9 o'clock in the morning on the Wednesday, and I was just petrified because this was something very new. I was just literally just worked in a factory for 2 years. Before then, I was at school, sixth form. And here we are, we've got a load of new cars, Hyundai vehicles, which at the time was up and coming, not like Hyundai is now, which is very well established. So I didn't really know which way it was going to go. So I had a great conversation, and I just said, look, I think they asked me a couple of questions. What would I like to achieve? You know, some real hard, difficult questions. And I just said, look, I just want to do well. I just want to better myself. And I just really want to, I really want you to give me a go. And they did. So I started off as a trainee. And I worked there all the way up from sales controller to sales manager, and I was there for 10 years. And that was the starting point of being in the motor trade. Anyone watching this that's in the motor trade, you just can't get out of it. Probably in the same industry that you're in. It's so, you just can't get out of the trade. It's just one of them. So I started then, so that was Hyundai.
I guess it's hard to get out of a trade, but it's easier to pivot when you're within a trade. So, I mean, we've definitely found that with our firm. Like, we were a traditional accounting firm, although we did things in an untraditional way. And then about 2 years ago, we moved into financial management, giving people information in real time and forward-looking information rather than looking at previous accounts and management accounts.
Yeah.
So I mean, as a business, we've pivoted, but I've seen a lot of our clients do the same thing. So, but I do understand, like, a lot of the time, you know, people don't like leaving that security of the knowledge they built within a certain industry and leveraging that knowledge. But that makes a lot of sense. So,
so I loved it. So I loved working there. I absolutely did. But still, there was a drive in me that I just needed to get this police thing just sorted. I just had this dire need that I really needed to join the police. It's just something I've always wanted to do. So I applied. And when I applied, I was 20. At this time, I was 20, 21. And I went all the way through the interview process and all of that. And I thought we're sort of heading the right direction here until we got to the last, back then, it's all very different now, I think, but there was, at the very end, you've got you're interviewed by two sergeants and they ask you numerous questions, you know, great questions. But the feedback I got was that I didn't have any worldly experience. I just didn't have anything. And I just needed to sort of just venture out. I just needed to do things for myself and just do things a little bit more differently than I was doing. And this was probably 2 years. So if I just rewind this back, this was probably 2 years when I was actually in the motor trade in working for Hyundai. So I thought, right, well, I'm not going to get in the police now then. So I'm going to stick with this role. And I just need to just work out what I'm going to do. So I just sat down and I thought, right, well, what do I think that they're looking for? They need someone that's very sort of customer orientated. I need to get out there, probably need to learn how to look after myself, maybe do a martial art. That would probably help, good standing for that. So that's what I did. So I just literally enrolled myself in a Taekwondo club. Got to black belt in that, and it got to a point then where I was then at Hyundai then for the 10-year stint.
Yeah.
And I thought, right, now's the time to retry.
How long did it take you to get to a black belt?
It took about four years. Massive passion of mine, martial arts. Massive passion.
You stood it?
Yeah. Strangely enough, I've actually joined back again.
Okay.
Because my eldest son, who's four, has just taken up 6 months ago.
Do you get to keep your black belt?
No.
Do they reinstate you?
I bloody wish you could. that's a different subject altogether. Yeah, it's a different subject altogether. It's something that I've always loved. I've always loved martial arts. That's come back off of Karate Kid. Grew up around Karate Kid.
Yeah, Cobra Kai.
Kai, love that. The remakes are absolutely superb as well. Have you seen those on Netflix, the remakes? Yeah.
Yeah.
So, yeah, all of that. Bruce Lee. I just loved it all. Absolutely loved it all. But I just needed to continue to do that and continue to work in Hyundai. Anyway, long story short, I reapplied. As I reapplied, I went all the way through. Literally no issues at all, to a point where two of the sergeants actually come into the dealership to buy a car secretly, like a mystery shop, and then told me right at the very end who they were. So yeah, it was all going really, really well, and passed it all, no problems at all. And then I got a letter come through saying, congratulations, at the time you're going to Sandhurst, which I think my memory serves me, hopefully it serves me right, but still it seems a bit...
They sent police officer candidates to Sandhurst?
Back then, yeah, then, because it was like a month training, in-house training. I'm sure it was Sandhurst, I may have got that completely wrong. It was a long time ago.
Yeah.
So I had to call this number, and as I called the number, they answered and had to give this reference number. And for whatever reason, it just didn't happen. It just, they said, I'm really sorry, we can't continue this process any further. So I had to then call the police again to understand what was going on. And what it was, they needed more experience. They needed a little bit more. And I just thought, at this point, I thought, I've tried it twice. If anything, moving forward in my life, I could become a community officer in 10 years' time or something. But at that point, I was very disappointed. I thought, it's just not happening for me. So then, I then sort of just, there was an opportunity to become a, I think it was the dealer principal or something. It was a position that I really wanted within the dealership. And for whatever reason, I didn't get that either. So I was getting all these knockbacks, left, right, and centre. And then I then left. I then got a job at Fiat because I thought the grass was always greener. Massive lesson. It wasn't. I was there 6 months, hated every last minute of it. Different processes, different ways.
It's a different culture?
100%. Yeah, and that's something that I've really sort of learned over the past sort of 12 years, 11 years, that you need a firm culture within business. But I wanted my old job back. So I got my old job back. And it was going okay. So then that's sort of 12 years on. So that it all felt fine, no problems. And then there was this new product that came out in the marketplace called contract hire and leasing. And Hyundai wanted a little subdivision to do that. And a good friend of mine was working there in this department, which I worked with him then. I sort of joined the team and it was called Orchard Leasing. So I did a little bit of leasing and that's got a real good footing of what leasing was all about, but it was very new, not like it is today. So that went really well. But then the problem is that the owner at the time, for whatever reason, had a massive falling out with Hyundai.
Okay.
So the whole company literally went not bust, but the writing was on the wall, let's put it that way. And they needed a new owner. So my father and a very good friend of his, mad into their cars, car enthusiasts, love Lotus and everything else, they decided then to do a bit of a sort of like a buyout. And with that, I was then, a lot of the team was removed. Some of the sort of dead wood and all of that were removed, new people in. But then I took the role then as sales manager. Very young at the time. And I enjoyed it. But the pressures that we faced around that time, financial crash 2008, around there, it just hit the motor industry so hard. And where we were doing a lot of cars, it sort of reminds me really what happened a few years ago. We were doing a lot of cars and then things then changed in a very dramatic way. So the financial crash happened, no one was spending at all. And we really struggled, absolutely struggled. But we continued trading for 3 to 4 years. Built the team slowly, but it just wasn't working. It just wasn't working at all.
You're talking about the financial crash of 2008. Yeah. So was the issue like people weren't lending on finance?
Not so much that. It was the customer confidence.
Okay, fine. So there's still products available.
Products available, but a lot harder to get on finance because of that. But customers were just staying put. They didn't want to do anything. Sounds a bit familiar for what's been happening this year with interest rates rising and everything else.
Yeah.
It's exactly the same. So we struggled, really, really struggled. So we had no choice but to really close the dealership, which was very difficult at the time because I was there, now we're talking 14 years. So I was there from a young boy, trainee, all the way up. I saw some great customers. I saw, you know, I've got a great rapport with the team. And it all sort of went. So I decided, well, what am I going to do? I had a mortgage. I was single, thankfully, back then. but I had a mortgage. So the only thing I could possibly do is that we had a few cars that were around us. Mm. Everyone jumped ship. Everyone found other jobs and everything else. But there was me still in the dealership, literally all battened down the hatches. No one was coming in. And I actually felt quite bad because probably 2 or 3 weeks later, one of the members of the team, one of the old mechanics that had been there for 40 years, because Hyundai was running for 20, 30 years before we took it over. But he was on holiday. So he sort of knocked on the door with his lunchbox. Mm. And I said, I'm really sorry, but it's shut.
Wow, okay.
Yeah. That's difficult. That's difficult. And especially a lot of the people there as well. A lot of great people. And it was just, it was awful times. So I had no choice that to start selling a couple of these cars that we had. Mm. We own these vehicles, these old part exchanges.
Yeah.
So for the next 18 months, I was buying and selling cars. So I was become a trader. Mm. So I was advertising on the Auto Trader. People would come around to the house, customers. They were doing I was doing the test drives I was enjoying it.
So did you close the office at that point and give up the lease? Or
office was completely...
Was that a freehold or...?
Yeah, it was. It was completely shut. Office was completely shut. It was Hyundai took it over.
Oh, did they? Okay.
They took it over. Actually, I think it all went over then to Milton Keynes Hyundai, I think. But it was dark days. But I was still young. I didn't really know, I didn't know how things were going to pan out. But I was doing this trading, and this trading I really enjoyed. So buying and selling cars, it was great. But the problem that I found is I got lonely. I was on my own, working from home, and I didn't have a team around me. At first, it was brilliant because I could go to the pub with my mates after work, after they finished work. They went to work at 7 in the morning. Well, I could have a bit of a lay-in. Jump on the old PlayStation, do a little bit of work, sold a couple of cars, happy days. So, but really, I thought, I actually need to get a proper job. I need to get a really, do you know what I mean? I need to get back into work. I can't sustain this. So I looked then at where could I go and what do I really want? What do I really want to achieve? So I thought going back into the dealership is something that probably I'd have to do. But I don't really want to go back to a non-premium brand. I want to go to a premium brand this time. So I sent a lot of CVs. Back then it's CVs. Believe it or not, no emails back then. So I sent a load of CVs to a lot of these dealerships. And one dealership made contact, and it was Wollaston BMW. So they contacted me, and they said, look, we were interested in your CV, because I applied. I think it was online, so what am I on about? No emails, it was. I applied online, and I then had an interview. But the strangest thing is, because of the experience of dealing with people on the shop floor in terms of factory working and all of that stuff, going for different aspirations with going for the police, doing my black belt, working as a sales manager at a Hyundai garage, and then doing the working for myself as a trader, they love that.
Okay.
And that's what they wanted, because they could see that I could work for myself, but I just need a bit of guidance. I need a little bit of love.
Hi, it's Nishi here. And before we continue with the rest of the podcast, I just want to take a few seconds to explain what we do. We're a firm of accountants and business advisors, and we are really passionate about helping people grow and scale their own businesses and achieve the lifestyle they deserve. To do this, we've created a series of resources on our website, unrelentingdrive.com. So once you've got a few minutes after this episode, it's definitely worth checking that out. And just a quick reminder, if you do enjoy this episode, just remember to like, share, follow and subscribe.
To be around a team. I was young. And we're talking now, early 30s now. People probably watching this thinking, well, I'm only 25. That doesn't sound young. Well, it was young. But it was young for the motor trade. It was young for that dealership because I was the youngest person there. It was...
What was your role?
As a salesperson. I was a new car salesman.
Yeah.
So I had to get to speed very quickly with the product. And it's very different now, this day and age. Very, very, very different. But the customer, the Hyundai customer 20 years ago, was very different than a BMW customer 20 years ago. Things have changed dramatically nowadays.
The gap's probably closed a bit.
100%, yeah, absolutely. But the clientele was very, very different. There's a certain way that you had to speak to people. There's a certain way that you had to conduct yourself. There was a training course called Fast Track, which was a two-week intensive course in-house in Wokefield Park, where even the people behind the bar serving drinks at night were employed by BMW to see how you were.
Oh, really? Wow.
Yeah, because they needed the best of the best.
Yeah.
It was like the elite. So it's honestly...
It's a non-stop assessment centre.
I can tell you now, I promise you now, if there's two salespeople together, I can tell you where they work, whether it's premium brand or non. You can tell.
So this is interesting. I guess it's a bit of a detour, but the people behind the bar who were working for BMW...
Yeah.
Did you know that they worked for BMW? Or you only found out later?
We found out when the following morning, these people that were a little bit rowdy, probably had an extra drink than they shouldn't have done or did whatever, they weren't there. And it's like, what's going on there? And the rumours were, did you know that the people all worked for BMW? It's really bad. It's really bad. They needed that certain person. They needed that certain... It's the whole thing is brand. It's brand. And even more so today. So there's brand awareness courses. It was just, you had to be a certain way. You had to talk a certain way. You had to act a certain way. When customers were coming into the showroom, there's a certain way you had to conduct yourself. There was a certain presentation of the vehicle. There was a 5-point presentation of the vehicle that you had to do. They're probably still the same now. So I joined, did all of that. And my first week, I absolutely loved it. I loved it. Loved it with a passion. I was there first thing in the morning, earlier than anyone, and I always left. I was always the last to leave. That was something that was installed. That was something that I've always learned over the years, probably from my father and my family as well.
So that's interesting you say that, because what happens a lot today is everyone's talking about work-life balance. And do you find this conflict?
It's no such thing. No such thing.
As in, what do you mean by no such thing?
See, you're not sure. I can feel it now. I think there's. I don't believe in that. I think you're a father. I'm a father. I find it's very difficult. Very difficult to switch off. You can't become business owner, and you cannot become father at the same time. There's a switch, and I find that when I leave work. So I leave work at 5:30 in the morning. I leave work at 5:30 for one reason, so I don't get the kids up, because if I'm clowning around, they're going to get up and my wife won't be too happy. So I have to leave. So I'm naturally at work early. People see it and they think, oh, look, he's at work early. And it's because of that, because I need to be at work and I need to flick that switch that, bang, I'm business mode now. Don't get me wrong. If there's things outside that affect that, if I get a phone call from nursery that my son is not well, of course, bang, I'll get back. But I find it's very difficult to go between the two.
Well, yeah, I agree with that. So, I mean, I've really been struggling with this over the last 5 years, since my first kid was born. And I think maybe some people might have noticed a bit of a change in me just in terms of pressure from so many different directions. But I think I've been gradually getting to the point where, you know, I'm coming to terms with, okay, I grew up being taught that you've got to work really hard, you've got to work long hours, you've got to be there longer than everyone else. And then you've got this contrasting opinion, which is like, don't miss a minute of your kid growing
100%.
Up. And trying to find the solution to that has been a very difficult solution to find, because some people will just say, hey, just work less hours. But you know what? You got your family at home, but you got your family at work that also need you. So you're not. It's not just a case of you can take from one and give it to the other. But actually, what I think it's been doing is if people ask me why do I want to scale my business, there's probably two reasons it always comes back down to. Firstly, so I can help more people, not just in terms of my team, but also our clients. But the second one, but I don't think they're in either one's more important is actually I want to scale my business so I can spend more time with my family, because by scaling a business, typically you have more staff who can take more stuff off you, and it's less dependent. But I think one thing I realized is if you build a business or you grow a business, that's not going to give you that work-life balance. It's only scaling a business that will really give you that work-life balance. Yeah. And I've a good client of ours, Tim Carroll from Dunnell Connections, he gave me a book. I haven't actually read the book, but I downloaded the audio version instead, 7 Habits of Highly Effective People. And I've been listening to that on the when I drove to Italy like a couple of weeks going back. So I read 2 amazing books. I read Good to Great by Jim Collins on the way there. And then I've read 7 Habits of Highly Effective People on the way back. And one of the things, I already kind of knew it, but the 7 Habits of Highly Effective People, it talks about the 4 quadrants. Like, you know, you've got importance on one axis and you've got urgency on the other axis. And it talks about how a lot of people, they really focus on the important and urgent stuff. But to really be successful, you have to focus on the important but not urgent stuff. And I think a lot of people, according to the book, they focus on the important and urgent stuff, and then they need a break from that. So then they go, so what they do is to take a break from the important, urgent stuff, they go and do the not important and not urgent stuff that they shouldn't be doing at all. But the book talks about how highly effective people like really focus on quadrant 2, which is important but not urgent. So, and really like, everything I'm trying to do in the business to get that work-life balance that we're talking about is just about focusing on that not important, important but not urgent quadrant. So I think what you're saying though, like, you know, you're probably in quite a similar place to me in terms of family.
I think the thing is as well, it all depends on the industry that you're in. So the industry that I'm in, it's changing at such a rapid pace. I haven't got the luxury to just sit at home and just have that sort of life balance.
What do you think the biggest changes in your industry are?
Where do you want me to begin? I think we've had the EV revolution.
What's the one that keeps you awake at night?
AI.
Okay.
Yeah, that's coming. Like,
how is it going to impact vehicle leasing?
It's weird. At the moment, it's like a tsunami. We're having a bit of you can feel it, there's a bit of a wind, a bit of gush of wind. And all of a sudden, it's going to literally come through. I've seen a lot of these interviews that you've done, and I know there's certain guests that you've had on here that don't think that it's going to affect them. I personally think AI is going to affect the industry in such a way, but for the better. ChatGPT. So we'll touch on that. So I'm very fluent with ChatGPT. We use it daily. I use it and the team use it for our systems, for how we do things, how we integrate and how we respond to customers, emails. It's phenomenal. It halves the workload like you wouldn't believe. But you still need someone to input. You still need the scripts to put in there. If I was a coder, if I was in that profession, I'd be fairly worried, because you could put anything in ChatGPT and it spits out the code for anything, anything. It's just...
Wait, can like ChatGPT write PHP code, for example?
Within 3 seconds.
Okay.
Python as well. So it'll do everything that you want it to do.
Yeah.
So but people say, well, yeah, but it hasn't got that human element. Well, you just type it, make it be more human. It will do it. It's scary. So what I've said to the team, you know, we've looked at it, we've implemented a lot of things, but we use it for a very, in a scale that's not in the larger scale. So where it's going to implement, I think where it's going to really hit the industry, I think, changes of how customers deal with businesses. And I think the biggest... As much as I'm all for this AI, I think it's going to be great. If you're against it and you think no, I don't, you have to be on board with it, because you can get anything of your business, content, SEO. Let's touch on SEO very quickly. So the SEO for Silverstone, I looked on a lot of articles. I did a lot of articles myself.
Yeah.
Struggled. I used an advertising company, not local, but I used an advertising company to do all the SEO stuff, and it cost me a fortune, $3,000-$4,000 a month. I thought, this can't be, you know, I know this saying, it's not rocket science, but I understand a little bit of keywords. I understand about that. My whole business is built around online. I've got an online presence. We haven't got a showroom. It's online.
Yeah.
So customers go online. They see an offer. They inquire. We've got chat, customers can interact with us that way. So I thought, like, it can't be that hard. So with all these things, there's one great source of where you get great information from. It's a thing called Google. So you go on there, type in SEO. What is it? How do you do it? And lo and behold, it just comes up with a few bits. I then looked at the articles, how to create articles. I utilized that with ChatGPT. I got keywords. So you just type in keywords for car leasing, press enter. Within a second, it's come up with 30 keywords. Within those 30, I can generate then articles within those 30 with relevant keywords that rank on Google. Google love it. They absolutely love it. Google's brought out their own called Bard.
Yeah.
That's not that great, because ChatGPT is sort of is really...
It's more advanced, I guess.
It's more advanced. You can also pay £20 as well for ChatGPT-4.
Is that where you get an API?
It's just, that's on steroids.
Oh, is
so
that okay?
That's serious, yeah. That's serious stuff. It's more in-depth. Mm. It's more, you want to know something or you want an article doing...
It's £20 a month? Or
yeah, it's £20, yeah. So it's hardly anything.
No, you're right.
But so where I'm going with this is that on our analytics, on our website, our articles were ranking anywhere between, I would have said about 500 to 1,000 impressions a day.
Yeah.
Which was okay. Within that, I was probably getting about 10 clicks onto the website organically. Mm. Anything outside of organic, I'll have to pay.
Yeah.
So using ChatGPT, using some methods, which people are more than welcome to contact me and I'll go through it. I don't really want to sort of discuss it over here because my competitors no doubt will be watching this. So utilizing a few proven ways I found literally on YouTube, within a space of 2 months, we got pages ranking on first page of Google. The traffic now is probably about 20 to 30,000.
Were those for national keywords?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. And that's a great question as well, because it's the keywords, the long tail keywords are really good, but learning or knowing where you find those keywords and what they are is where you use ChatGPT. So you'll see where I'm going with this. You use it as a person, as a that's your marketing manager, your SEO manager. That's it there for £20 a month.
You're describing our process as well. Actually, it's quite a similar one. We use a bit of software called SEO Surfer. It's I think AI, I've realized, like, not anyone can just come along and use AI. They've got to understand how to integrate it within their processes and systems.
They do, but the way to learn that is by Google and YouTube. YouTube is a great source. I follow a chap on YouTube, and I'll say the channel. It's called Income Surfer. An income surfer, follow him, is based in Italy, from America.
Yeah.
And he's got 3 or 4 websites that he's just literally set up the past 3 months, and he's got them ranking first page on Google. But he tells you the hits, the hints, the tips, and I've utilized a lot of what he's done. And I've learned it, put it into ChatGPT, and it's worked. And I can see that. And now, where we're getting 2 or 3 clicks a day, we're getting 200, 250 clicks a day.
So you know what? I think there's a really important lesson in this, which I kind of want to cover. I covered this in a LinkedIn video I did a few weeks back, but it's, why do a lot of businesses fail even when they're doing all the right things? Mm. And like, everything you're talking about is like a long-term strategy. I know you can
100%.
You can kind of get short-term wins on SEO, but I think a lot of business owners, like especially earlier on in their business, they'll try this stuff for a month, they might try this for 2 months, and they might give up because they'll say, okay, well, I'm not on the first page of Google anymore. But really, like, you know, to get onto the first page of Google for these terms, how long did it take you?
It took, you wouldn't believe the results. It depends on what you're searching for. If you're searching for car leasing, That, honestly, that's going to take a long time because you need site authority. Yeah. You need a lot of backlinks. You need a lot of things. But if you're looking for something like no deposit car leasing,
yeah,
or car leasing Northampton, car leasing Milton Keynes, you've got a fairly good chance you'll get front page within 48 hours.
Wow, 48 hours?
Yeah, and you'll see a return investment very quickly. But the key with this, you need to keep on top of it. Video is by far the thing at the moment. And what I'm looking to do on every single page on the website, I'm looking to get video content from ourselves, get it on there, because Google, the algorithms for that is just phenomenal. That linked in with YouTube, because guess who owns YouTube?
Yeah.
Exactly. So it helps. So that's exactly what we're looking to do. But I really want to, if I could just touch back on the work-life balance.
Yes.
I sounded quite harsh on that. Like, I don't see my kids.
No,
they're
all right.
They're in some sort of room locked up and we don't never see them. That's not the case. We have
it's
got...
like Elon Musk.
So I've got this thing. When I'm at work. But the breaks are when I get home. So I get to work early, but then I'll make sure I'm at home for half five. Because it's very important for me to sit down and have dinner with my family. As a family, sit down, not by the TV, sit literally on the table, have a meal, and we can talk about the day. Usually it's work related, because my wife now is in the business as well.
Yeah.
After which it's beds, it's baths, beds and books in that order. Mm. Baths, books and beds in that order. And that's been like it for 5 years since my eldest has been born. I cannot express that enough, that that's what I do. And the reason I do that is because when I was growing up, my father had his own business. We never saw him. And this is where you get that work-life balance. Work-life balance is in many facets. It can be in many things of, you've got a single lad, let's say, that likes going out on the town, having a few drinks. That for him is his life. Mm. That's his life balance. Someone like us that's got a family, for me, that's the life balance. The work is work, that's the life balance. We're trialing this thing, and we're doing this thing at the moment, my wife and I. At the weekends, we turn our phones off.
Okay.
Now that's, now that's hard. No tablets, no devices, just our time for the weekend. I have out of office on, so if someone emails me, on a Saturday afternoon, it must be fairly serious, but they know numbers to call. But it's something that we've done, and it's something that we believe is so important for the kids. So that's what we've done, and that's what we're doing, and it's working very well. Because I get your point. I feel guilty if I'm not there. I feel guilty if I'm not... if I haven't gone to a show, I feel guilty if I haven't gone to the whatever it may be, Halloween do they've got a preschool, all of that. I feel guilty, but I don't feel guilty because I go.
Yes.
And this is the problem, and this is the thing where my wife was working before, her position was full time, and it progressed where she was up and down the country. She couldn't go to a lot of these things. She couldn't pick up my youngest, or she felt really, what's the word? She wasn't in a very good place, let's put it that way. So she had a massive change of career. Now she's doing an accountancy course. She's just done an ATT, an accountancy, level two. And now she's on board part-time with Silverstone. Brilliant. Because now she's there with the kids. This is a prime example, because the kids are off now for 6 weeks. So it gives her enough time. For me, that's the work-life balance. Mm. But I always will be there for them. But I still will have to go in at night to do my videos, to do my podcasts. I've got no choice.
That's like with me, actually. Like, I've got this drive to get the business to a point I can work less hours, which I think I'm well on track to do. But actually, I don't work. I want the option to work less hours, but I don't want to work less hours. Because one thing I do notice with kids, and you just have to be flexible around it. Like, yeah. You know, you're talking about putting your kids to bed. Like my kids are in bed by 8 o'clock half eight. And then I've got an hour in that evening. And then, you know, how do I spend that hour?
I
catch up on The Witcher, Star Trek.
Or falling asleep in front of the TV.
Or a lot of the time it could be, you know, watch that content on YouTube to help me understand marketing better, to help me understand running a business better. Do that personal development time. Mm. So actually, and even in weekend mornings, like when you don't have the kids around, you've got a choice. Do you actually spend that time watching TV or playing on your PlayStation? And when I was younger, I definitely would have.
Yes, me too.
But now I'm more and more aware of, like, actually the personal development requirement and the fact that I might not be able to do it all in my work time. So I do it in my spare time a lot more. So
I find podcasts are very good. I listen to a lot of podcasts in the car.
Yeah.
I don't read. Not that I can't read. I tell you what, my reading's got a lot better after reading to the kids for 5 years on the trot.
Yes.
I don't know about you, but Jesus Christ, I can read really well out loud.
If only they didn't want to read the same book every day.
Yeah, I'm the same. I'm exactly the same. But what I do find is I find it very difficult. I think for my attentions, I think I've got a little bit of, I think I'm a bit dyslexic, I think, in a way. I think I've got a little bit of that because I can switch off. Read a book and I'll get bored of it. And that's probably why I wasn't very good at school, I think. But podcasts for me or audio books are the way forward. And I've gone through so many audio books. And I think for me, it's personal development. One thing that I'm really, really into is a thing called The Secret. I don't know whether you've...
Yeah, I've heard of it. So The Power of Manifestation.
Yeah, Manifestation, Law of Attraction and everything else. I am all up for that. And I believe it works like you wouldn't believe. That much so that the office where we're working at the moment, probably 5 years prior, I had the vision and dream that that is the office that we was going to move into, to a point where I had a picture of someone else's barn. It overlooked fields, overlooked cows, the smell of coffee as you walked in, Sky News playing on a plasma, happy team. Sometimes rare, but happy team as you walk in. And then all of a sudden that happened, and where we are now, it overlooks the fields, the cows, Sky News, usually I'm making the coffees, the team watching this, they know they do. It's manifesting in a way in which you have to have these dreams, and things fall into place. And if you look at where it all started from the factory, from not going into the police, from Hyundai to selling and buying cars myself, and then Wollaston, it's got me to Silverstone now. So
Scott, how did you, apologies if we've already covered this, but how did you go from BMW Wollaston to starting your own business? Was there like an event that...
Yeah, massive, massive. I just had enough of the motor trade. I had enough. I got to 15, 18 years in it, probably longer now at the time. And I just had enough, so I just come away. And I was getting quite down, getting quite depressed, if the truth be known. My manager, he was leaving to go to Dubai. Mm. This was at Wollaston at the dealership. And I was looking after brokers, so I was looking after people like companies like Silverstone.
Yeah.
And within the industry, BMW were not allowed to deal with brokers. It was frowned upon because the mentality was, why should you deal with a broker that's going to be selling our product? Why don't you, dealership, go out and do it? Well, they don't realise that we're set up to deal with a lot of customers very quickly, and we do things in a very different light. And we can also offer multitude of various different cars. So, for example, if you was looking at Mercedes, for example, but you didn't really want a Mercedes, you wanted something else, I could offer you a BMW. Mm. Working at BMW, I could only offer BMW. I couldn't offer anything else. So a lot of my customers said, look, we want to deal with you, but we want something else. So I got quite down. Business wasn't going great. Lost all of the business. It lost all of lost all of my accounts because we weren't allowed to deal with that. And I then spoke to my sister, which at the time, my sister Stacey took my dad's company over. So they had a management buyout. They took that over, called Filtration Control. And there was a little subdivision there, an environmental management division called J&S Environmental Management, I think back then. So she said, do you fancy coming on board? I thought, oh my God, environmental management, what on earth is that? It's just waste, what do I do? But because I was in such a bad place, doing the same thing, and things weren't just going in the right way, I went for it. I said, yeah, why not? So I went for the, I went for it, had the leave and do, and I just ventured into something completely alien compared to what I've ever been used to. All my life is cars. So yeah. Now I'm going into something else. But as an account manager, so I thought, well, I could go back to my old customers, speak to them. I could do all of that. Maybe there's a route to market there. But so anyway, and the dream and the whole idea was that I'll be looking after an account that they've just got on board. So I'll be nurturing, looking after this new account. So I had the leave and do. So a month later, handed my notice in. A month later, I left. Remember it clear as day because it was March the 1st. It was new plate registration change. I wasn't there at the dealership because I started my new role. Walked in and it all went okay. The first couple of days were fine. But what happened was the account that I went to manage, they didn't win. They didn't win that account. I thought, oh my God. So the question then is, well, you could go back to your old place. I thought, well, I've just had a leave and do on Sunday.
Yeah.
I can't go back. So I thought, well, what am I going to do? So I looked at it. And obviously spoke to a lot of people about it. And then I thought, well, we all got around the table. I said, well, why don't we set up a brokerage? I thought, could we do that? Actually become a broker? We've been supplying cars, my old role, supplying cars to broker. How do we become a broker? Well, the only way that we could do that is get funders. But how do we get funders when it's the chicken and egg. You only can get funders if you do the business, but you need the funders to do the business.
Help me understand. When you say funders...
So it's the finance company. So,
okay, got it. Yeah.
So if you was gonna lease a car, it would go through a finance company, and we'd facilitate the payments. We'd work out, do the quotation for you.
Yeah.
But the agreement would be with the finance company.
Like, and do you have to have an FCA approval?
Yes, absolutely.
Okay, fine.
Yeah. We have to be so compliant, and especially at the moment with Consumer Duty, we have to be whiter than white.
Is that fun?
Is that fun? I love it in a very strange way because I know my competitors don't.
It's a barrier to entry.
Yeah. And I know that my competitors, some of them are cowboys. Mm. And they do things in a certain way. So to be whiter than white is 100% the way forward and the way that we've always run the business. But going back to that point with my that environmental management, so I was doing that. And that all lasted for all about 2 or 3 days. Had the idea then of being a broker. But when we had this idea, and I thought, yeah, it sounds great. And thanks to my sister, she said, look, we will. You can have an office within the factory. You can have an office. As long as you sort out our cars, we'll be your first customer. Mm. You don't have to pay a penny, but as long as you look after everything, all the cars and everything. So that was our first customer, so it was great. So that's what we started to do. Built up some relationships very slowly. But the driving force with that was that there was a lot of people that said, it's never going to work. You'll be back at a dealership.
Mm.
A lot of people thought that I left the car dealership, left Wollaston to become a broker. Far from it. I didn't want to become a broker. I just fell back into it.
Yes.
That's all I've ever wanted. That's all I could do. So that's what happened there, and we grew the business very slowly. Trying to get funders was the hardest thing. Even to this day, trying to get funders is difficult.
Is that because you've got to demonstrate a certain level of financial stability? And
absolutely. You need trading history. You need to show something different than no one else is doing. You need to come to the party with some new ideas.
So help me understand that a bit. Like, because these guys sell finance, right?
Yeah.
In the same way someone might sell a mortgage.
Yes, yeah, exactly the same.
But a lot of mortgage brokers don't have to show originality. Why do you have to do it in the car industry?
Because there's a lot of brokers. I'm not saying there's not many mortgage brokers. Of course there is. But I think it's just... I think it's just the industry. I think it's just the industry. It's because the funders are quite selective on who they bring on board.
Because they view the industry as a finite number of relationships they can realistically manage. They want to give it them to the best people.
Yes. Yeah, I think you've got it there. I think it's they need to see high levels of customer service. They need to be seeing a broker that can that does things exceptionally well. Mm. That they know that they're going to be that there's going to be a very sort of a very close bond and a partnership. Because what they don't want is that they don't want to have a broker on board that's basically going to go bust within 12 months.
Yeah, because all the setup costs behind opportunity cost.
And we've got some funders that they've only got 20 to 30 brokers, very exclusive. And some of these funders, it's taken 8 years to get.
How many funders do you need?
There's 12. There's about 10 in the industry. We've got 8.
Okay.
There's 2 that we haven't got because there's been a bit of a...
What's the benefit of having 8 rather than 2?
Special offers.
Okay.
So special offers and just their rates, just their rate book, I should say.
And is it because some are better at funding one type of demographic, whereas... Okay.
Not so much. Is that it's all about it's all about their costings. So some, their interest rates slightly high, some are slightly lower. Some, it's all about residual values. So some funders, let's say I've got a funder called Alphabet, BMW owned. So you know that if any business goes through to BMW, the residual value is going to be a lot stronger because it's their brand. Do you see what I mean?
So you're saying, I'm inferring that part of the way you add value is matching the right funders up with the right type of vehicle.
It's and to the right offer person. To the customer as well.
Okay.
Because that's all about the consumer duty, making sure that customer has got the right, basically right deal for them. So so with all of the 8 funders, we supply all of the 42 different manufacturers, but some funders are better than others. How our website works is that all of the rate books, we've got millions of deals that go into the website, and the best offers always populate first. It's quite a simple sort of sequence there. So, but the more funders we have, the better we are in terms of position for the customer, because we can offer anything and everything. So when you start out, we're doing sort of 50 to 100 cars in the first year. You sort of propel that to sort of last year, it was about 1,500 cars.
Wow, okay.
So, but things have dipped because of the market. You know, no one could envisage that we was going to have COVID, that everyone's going to die, and then next thing you know, we've got war. And
so this is probably just a very basic question for someone watching this who doesn't understand. Do you make your money by the funders giving you a commission?
Yes, yeah. So there's 2 ways we make our money. One is a sort of set fee from the finance company. Whatever that fee is set. And also there's a documentation fee or a service charge that we provide, that we ask for as well. So that's really how we make our money. Sometimes there's other things as well, maybe, but primarily that's what it is. So really it's a volume game. We need to, the more volume we do, the more money that we make. It's a very sort of, it's a great business model, but it's very turbulent at the moment.
Okay. And what are you doing to combat that turbulence?
Making sure our processes are absolutely spot on, doing what we say we're going to do. There's a lot of brokers out there. I bang the drum 24/7 on social media platforms that we do videos on, that we have got, there's certain brokers out there that offer fake deals. These are the deals that you go onto Google, you type in Tesla. So I think you drive a Tesla, don't you?
I do, yeah.
Yeah. So type in, you may have searched cheap Tesla or good deal Tesla or something like that, or Tesla Model 3. Lo and behold, you get these adverts that come up, usually directs you to a comparison site, maybe, and you see these lovely offers, and you'll see one offer that maybe, for argument's sake, £300, but the rest are £350. And you think, hang about, that's a really good offer. You inquire. This is what happens. You inquire. Maybe on that one, maybe with a few other companies as well.
Yeah.
And then lo and behold, the inquiry is taken. Someone gives you a call and says, look, that deal that you've seen at £300, look, we're really sorry, but it's we've only got one car left. Mm. You need to be quick. Let's get that proposal forming. Mm. Let's get your credit set up. Once the credit's been approved, we can then get the order form out. Once the order form's out, we'll order the car. You jump through the hoops to get that done. Any other broker that you spoke to or dealer, you disregard, because now you know that that deal is you believe is right. You then go through all the process, you get it all sorted, and then lo and behold, you get an email or a call at best saying, I'm really sorry, but that car is now gone. It just went. So, but what we have got is another car with metallic paint. The car that you saw was solid, but we've got metallic paint. It's an extra £40 a month more. Because you've been approved, it's best staying with us. You don't want to go with anyone else.
Yeah.
Is that going to be okay? And they probably break it down, probably £10 a week. How does that sound?
What do the FCA think of that?
That is a great question. Nothing.
The FCA don't have a problem with that.
Oh, they do.
The Financial Conduct Authority for anyone.
I think they would. They would. But this is something that just needs to be highlighted.
But is it so that it's technically illegal or against the rules?
I wouldn't say it's illegal, because you could easily justify that offer. You could easily say, well, we did have a solid paint car, but Bill, one of the salesmen, didn't take it off the website in time, or it's a batch offer that we had and the cars have now gone, but our website crashed. There's so many excuses, but we've been
doing it. What are the chances of that website crashing every single time?
Never. We've been doing it long enough to know the cowboys, and sometimes it is the Wild West.
But it sounds like a regulatory enforcement issue.
It's very difficult to govern. It's very difficult to govern. And I think where it needs to come into place is with the aggregator comparison sites, aggregator sites. These are the sites that have got all of these offers that we pay to advertise on them.
Yeah,
we pay £25. The business pays £25, maybe £30 a lead. So when you inquire with us, that costs £30.
Yeah.
So we need to make sure that we convert, but also make sure that we've got the right offers. But the biggest question is, how can we be competitive if we've got fake offers that are above us, that we know that they're fake? So one of the things I've suggested to these companies, why don't you sort of go to bed with a broker that's got all the funders, that you can see all the stock, and you can see what's real and what's not. But it's the biggest question of why.
Because I guess a lot of the comparison companies are competing against each other.
That's right.
So where they've got the lowest deal, they're getting
more
traffic away from the other comparison companies.
That's right. And also because they're charging us as well for more leads that they get, the better it obviously is for them. So how do you manage it? Well, the way that we look at it is twofold. We tell the customer straight off, what we offer is genuine offers. We never, never offer fake offers.
Yeah.
Secondly, if you go on our website, we've got a presenter on the website, on the front page, to explain about what we do and the fake offers that potentially is out there. If they do find an offer that's better than what we're offering, come back to us. See if we can beat it. We'll also find out if it's true. If it's not true, if it's fake, and the customer gets burnt, the door's always open, because sometimes the customer won't want to come back to us because they feel a little bit embarrassed.
Yeah.
Do you see what I mean? That they've done all of this and they've gone elsewhere because they think it's a cheaper price. Mm. It doesn't go as well as they thought. And I think, I don't really want to go back to Silverstone because it's, I just feel a little bit silly. But now what we do is that we make calls. We call those customers and say, look, how have you got on? Is that
happened? The follow-up is
so important, and the amount of times the customer says, you're bloody right, that was a wrong offer. That's fine, we'll look after you. So that's the personal side of the business. That's the PCH.
So how do you get the name Silverstone's car leasing?
If you ask my dad, he would say it's his idea.
Okay.
I can't remember those conversations. I think we both had a couple of beers at the time. But we realised that Silverstone is historically it's a great name for Northamptonshire because of the racetrack. So I thought, could we get away with it? Could we name it Silverstone? And it was called, the business was called Silverstone Fleet Management. That's what it was called originally. And we ran that name for, 8-9 years, Silverstone Fleet Management. The problem is with that, back then when I first started the business, I wanted the business to sound bigger than it actually was. Okay. So fleet management sounded grand. It sounded brilliant. We do thousands of cars. Mm. Well, we don't. Our core business are one-man bands. We love one-man bands. Plumbers, plasterers, electricians. Mm. You know, we supply vans to them. Businesses, SMEs, lovely. That's our core. Fleets of twos, threes, fives, core. Anything above that, yeah, we can supply, but we find that that level of service we can really maintain. We can really maintain. And we've got fleets now, 50 to 80 car fleets, which is lovely. Great companies, great estate agents in town that deal with us. And they have been for 8 to 10 years. Great relationships that we build. And that, to me, that's what it's all about. But we had to change the name. So with the EV revolution hitting, with everything going electric, salary sacrifice is a massive thing as well at the moment. Van leasing, personal leasing, we do it all, but customers don't realise that we do it. And the amount of calls we've had where people say, do you do personal leasing? Yeah. Do you do van leasing? Yeah. Oh, we didn't realise. So we spoke to a local company called Blaney Partnership. I don't know whether you're familiar with Blaney's. Austin Blaney, they do a lot of creative, a lot of graphic design. I know Austin really well and his dad. So they did all the creative for Silverstone. And the name Silverstone Leasing is now what it's called. So you've got Silverstone Leasing. Underneath that, you've got Embrace Leasing. That's a separate thing, but I'll come up to that in a minute. But we've got personal leasing, we've got EV leasing for the electric cars, van leasing, and fleet management. So we've still got Silverstone Fleet Management, but we just had to put everything all into one. So now everyone realises that it's leasing is what we do. It's only recently, past 48 hours, that we're going to launch something else called Silverstone Finance.
Okay.
So that's going to be our asset finance division of the business.
Yeah.
So we're stepping into that world as well.
We say asset finance, you mean machinery and equipment?
Yeah, so this is going to complement all of our clients that we've got currently. So, for example, if we're dealing with Acme Limited, then we supply them 20 to 30 cars. We've got great relationships with their fleet manager and the MD. If they need new computers or anything like that, that they need finance for, we can now provide that, or we will be able to provide it. So for me, it's just a bolt-on. It's just an added product.
Yeah, because you've already got access to the market, so you're upselling them
or
cross-selling them.
And I think we just have to be very careful. We have to be very careful because the question is, how long have we got for car leasing? How long have we got for people to inquire on a website and for us to do our jobs? I don't know how long that's going to be.
And do you think, and I've got a friend who works in the motor industry, well, in car dealerships, but selling marketing services, and his opinion essentially is, Dipesh, he was like the first person on this podcast in episode one, but his opinion is, like, you know, in 10 years time, everyone will just be getting leasing and funding and vehicles directly from the dealers. And because the dealers are going to go that way. Is that one of the things that you think will happen? And is that what's really limiting the time in the industry?
If we rewound this back and you said, what keeps me up at night? I think that's probably your answer there. I think Mercedes have trialed it. They're trialing it now as we speak. So
you have to burn a lot of bridges to trial that, don't you?
100%. You look at the registrations. Look at Mercedes registrations. If you just Google that, they're down 45%, I think, registrations year on year. They're down. They started this in January. Madness. Why on earth would... Why would you try to do something where you're sort of just saying to the customer, you have to deal with us. Mr. Customer, you want a Mercedes, you have to deal with this. You can't deal with any, at the time, any leasing company. It all comes through us, and that's that.
But these customers have a relationship with their brokers.
They do, and the finance companies as well. So it's just...
So then the customer has to pick between the brand and the relationship with their broker.
No brand is big enough for that. No brand.
The broker comes along and says, hey, how about a nice BMW? How about a nice Tesla instead?
What would you rather have? Let's say it was an A-class, right? You had an A-class. You wanted a brand new A-class. You go direct with Mercedes, which an A-class now, roughly speaking, £600 a month for an A-class. £600 a month. We could look to get you into a Audi, BMW, Tesla, whatever it may be, for virtually half that cost.
Mm.
Why would you pay more? There's no discounts. They don't offer any discounts. If you live in Brighton and you live in Scotland, it's the same price.
Yeah.
They've got it wrong. It's worked in Germany. That's where it's come from. It's worked there. Yes, it has.
But why has it worked in Germany? Is that because broker
market?
Germany,
the market there, it's all, they're trying things now. Subscription. Mm. They're doing that. You know, you can do a subscription service where you pay £1,000 a month. You can have a car every month.
Mm.
One manufacturer, UK start to do this, Land Rover, Jaguar, they start to do this, subscription service.
Yeah, I've heard of it.
Yeah, they stopped that now. It just hasn't worked. It's not, people, this country, that they want a set amount of money, they want a set price, they want to know what they're paying.
Mm.
Do you see what I mean? They want one set figure, they want one set price. And they don't want to be ripped off. Why would you want a Mercedes, which they're not that great anyway, compared to all the other manufacturers out there at the moment, Hyundai, Kia. Mm. The Koreans, oh my good God, they're coming over here like you wouldn't believe. Some of the Chinese brands now, Aura, Funky Cat, the new electric car, you may not have seen those at the moment.
No, I haven't.
Amazing. The Chinese brands, oh my good God, especially for electric, are phenomenal. They've got it right. But to do this in the early stages of this adoption for electric is such a bad move when you've got the likes of Tesla, Polestar that are just dominating. So to answer the question, going to a dealer, the customer I feel that just won't get that great level of service.
But then does it really keep you up at night? Because if Mercedes are doing it, it's such a flop. Or do you think they're taking a short-term hit and then in the long term it's going to work well for them?
It's coming back now. The thing is, it's coming back now to the funders. We can still, we can quote our customers, our corporate customers, Mercedes now. Mm. They've opened it up. All we have to do is just get terms, which that means discounts. All that is, it's a bit of paper I complete on your behalf. I send that off. You sign a form saying that you're going to have a minimum of 5 vehicles in a year. You may do, and you'll get your own specific terms, which I can then use. So it's the same, it's back, but they've lost a lot of momentum, and I think they've lost a lot of customers. You've still got a little bit of brand loyalty on a certain amount of customers that will always have Mercedes, but they'll be spending and they'll be paying a lot of money for that car. But the ones to look out for, it's all electric.
Mm.
Customers are saying, oh, it's not going to go electric, Oh, it is. Everything's going electric. Mark my words.
Well, I saw you turn up in a Tesla as well.
Yeah. Oh, best car.
Yeah. I love them. So, Scott, you mentioned you got a team of about 10 people.
Yeah.
So it was about 12, but then you've just had a little bit of restructuring at the moment. Have you got a couple of vacancies at the moment? Well, what I was going to say is, as part of that question, then, if you could just help people understand, what does your team look like? What are the functions within the team?
So we're sort of split. So we've got another company called Embrace Leasing, which Embrace Leasing solely provides personal leasing.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a bit of an offshoot to Silverstone, but this company is all on the comparison websites. They dominate all of that. And we've got a team made up. So we've got Joe that heads that up. I've got an apprentice, Amber, and Tom, that's been there for 6-7 years now. So they look after that. And then on the Silverstone side, that's more on the corporate side of the business. I head both up, really.
Mm.
But I'm a little bit more involved on the Silverstone side because I've still got more corporate customers that want to deal with me still.
And this is a really interesting conversation because the amount of business owners I talk to trying to set up that second business where some of them do need to do it and some of them don't. But when I talk to them, and one of the things I always ask, because, you know, as an accountant, I do like charging people for multiple companies. But more importantly, what is more important to me rather than charging our customers those money is making sure they're making the right decisions.
Yeah.
Because having lots of companies, it comes with more work, more complexity, more accounting fees. But the key thing is, like, you know, it's asking the questions, you know, why do you want the second company? Mm. Are you trying to do something you can't do with the first company? And from what you're describing, like Embrace Car Leasing, so you've got two separate brands, really. One, I guess one target market will look at and be put off by another target market. Yeah, will look at the other one and
absolutely
be put off by.
No, that's
and that's why you've got to split it. Is that right?
It's a great question. When Silverstone Fleet, when the name was, the trading name of Silverstone Fleet Management was there, a lot of the customers didn't realise that we still did personal leasing. So one of the ideas that we had was to have Joe to look at personal leasing, but set it up completely differently. So to call it Embrace Leasing. So you had Embrace, and then you had Silverstone Fleet Management. The dream with Embrace is to set, it's a trading name, so it's a trading style. Mm. It's not a limited company. Everything's still under Silverstone Corporation Limited. But the dream is really to have that as a standalone business in time.
Okay.
So we're trialing, we've been doing it for Christ, 4 or 5 years now. So it's going really well. That market was booming, absolute booming. Used cars. Personal leasing was booming before COVID. And then COVID hit, the slump really bad, because, well, everyone was locked down.
Mm.
But then when everyone come back to work, there's a lot of money about, because people on furlough. We did probably a year's worth of work in probably a year's worth of business in the space of a month. It just went off, and we thought, this is brilliant. So we've had ups and downs with it. We really have.
So you've got one business with about 3 people in. You've got another business with 7 people in, really.
Yeah. So with Silverstone Leasing, we've got 3 salespeople there. And then in between them, we've got a customer care department as well that oversees both of the different departments. Mm. So it's a whole sort of mixture. And we're trialing different things at the moment.
How do you... So a great question for something I'm really curious about is, I haven't always had the best success building a sales team in our business. And then, like, you know, eventually we got to a point where we decided to focus more on the marketing side to generate those leads. But actually, we do want to get back to generating our own sales team. But do you find it's something you naturally did quite well because you had a background in sales? Or is building a sales team still quite a challenging thing to do?
Oh, I find it very difficult. I find, for me, it's the motivation. I find self-motivation is sometimes the hardest.
But with salespeople, though, like, because salespeople can be the wild cards in a business, really, can't they?
They can, but it depends. The way to look at salespeople is what motivates them. Mm-hmm. And it's a multitude of various different things. And never be fooled that it's all about money. I've got certain people within the team. Money's not the motivator. It's not. I could say, right, I'm going to double your salary. Of course, I'd love that. But it's not the dominant motivator. What is that little bit of a chat of saying, bloody well done. You've done a great job today. That just goes such a long way. But it's finding what really does float people's boats. And I find that just by reviews. I'm very sort of hands-on as well with the team. I've got a mentor, a coach that I've had for 8 years.
Okay.
He wants me to take a step back.
Who's your mentor?
A chap called Tim Major, his name is.
Oh, so he's an ex-action
coach and everything else. He's a lovely bloke.
Where's he based?
He's based at home, but he's got 3 or 4 different businesses that he deals with.
Okay.
I've had him a long time, and I see him once every 2 weeks.
Mm.
It makes me accountable.
I used to have an action coach as well, actually.
Yeah, his ex-action
coach.
But he makes me accountable. And don't get me wrong, sometimes there's things that I'm not sure about. I think, I'm not sure about that.
Mm.
I'll give you a very quick example. We sat down a couple of years back, and he had a slide, and he said, I want to show you these slides. I thought, what's he doing now? Because he's in his early 70s, he's had a load of businesses and everything else, he's got a wealth of knowledge. And he was showing me the horse and cart. I didn't have a clue what he was talking about. I thought, oh God, what's he doing now? So show me these slides of this horse and cart. London, 1920s, I think it was. Horse and carts everywhere. Just the, you can imagine what the place looked like. And then all of a sudden then, the engine come about, the car. We didn't need horses anymore. So within a space of 5 years, or however long it was, there was another slide of cars. And he said, where's all the horses? So, oh my good God, yeah. And he said, well, I want to get you to think now about electric. I thought, electric, don't be silly. Things aren't going to go electric. Mm. We hear people talking about electric, but nothing's going to go electric. He said, look, we need to think about it. We need to get some strategy together because this is the route. This is where it's going to go. Mm. Everything's going to go electric. I thought, I'm not sure about this. So we, straight away, we had a URL. We got a URL called electricleasecars.com and had a website up for electric cars. Back then, there was hardly anything, but everything was so expensive.
Mm.
I trialed it for about 6 months, never worked. I said to him, it's not going to work, let's just leave it. He took that, said, fine, you know, at the end of the day, you're paying my wages, so if that's the way you really feel, Scott, that's fine. Fast forward that then a year, all of a sudden then, this name of Tesla come about, which has taken the market by storm, and you think, my God, he's really touched on something. So what I'm trying to get at is that he's sort of just aligned, he puts me in a certain place where he puts my feet on the ground at any given point. I'm accountable for, I've got charts, I've got graphs, you name it, I've got it. So I can see the conversion rates, I can see everything within the business. And that's really down to him for setting all that up for me many years ago. But some great KPIs that we use, just various different things, but he's taught me a lot, and that goes such a long way that, because you need that bit of grounding, because things can change in such a fast pace.
I think coaching for people scaling business is so important. I think I've had a coach for the last probably 3 years. I think it does make a big difference. But one thing I was going to really wanted to get to the bottom of as well is, like, I guess scaling your business up, you know, being that one man band who then has moved up to having 12 staff, that hasn't been easy, I can imagine. What was the toughest thing you've really had to go through to? I mean, a lot of people would say COVID at this point and dealing with that, just in terms of building the team and
COVID's tough. Don't get me wrong, because we didn't expect it and we didn't know how things were going to be. But I think the hardest thing for me with all of this over the years is that to diversify in the right way. So think of ideas and run with it. And 5 years in Silverstone, we had an idea of setting up a used car business. The whole idea,
a used car leasing business?
No, used cars, just selling used cars. Because I thought, well, a lot of these customers that are leasing cars, they've got part exchanges. Instead of giving them to a trader that we used to, or we buy any car, why don't we buy them off the customer? It will take a bit of a hit on the cash flow, but buy them off the customer, set up a unit, which we had a unit in Stoke Bruin, and we called it Silverstone Approved Cars, and we'd retail. So I thought, this could work. I was dealing with it. I was looking after all the customers coming in, cleaning the cars, marketing the cars, doing all of that. Loved it. First year just went like this. And I thought, we've cracked this. So all of these cars were coming in, we're selling them and all of that. And then I got a phone call from the accountant. And they said, right, you sitting down? I said, oh, God, yeah, I am. You need to stop what we do. We need to stop what we're doing. If you continue the way things are going. And this, basically what was happening is a lot of the cars that we sold, they were coming back with clutch problems, engine problems. They were just, they were used cars. And they had naturally had problems. The warranty that we had on them, I won't name the company, but they weren't worth the money they were written on. So it was a nightmare. So we had to pay for everything. It just cost so much. So the accountant said, right, you've got 2 months. if you, things don't change now, you won't have a business. That was 5 years in.
Yeah.
Thought, oh, shit, what on earth are we going to do? What on earth are we going to do now? So I then looked at it. I was so wrapped up in the used cars, I didn't see what was going on the fleet management side because we was based at my sister's place in Brattmills. Had a team of eight down there. They were all mucking about.
Oh, right, okay.
So I was seeing them in the morning. Yeah. As soon as I went, because I was so wrapped up in the used cars, things just weren't going well. And I've said this before, it's very difficult to spin so many plates. Mm. But you just need to make sure that when you're spinning these plates, one doesn't fall.
And can I assume you don't do the used cars anymore?
No.
Okay.
No, we stopped as soon as I had that advice. That was probably the best advice I've ever taken off my accountant.
Yeah.
She's still with me to this day. We stopped. Mm. It cost a lot of money to get out of that place we was at. Mm. Got rid of all the cars. Focused all of the energy then onto Silverstone Fleet Management. We had two horrific years of trading. The losses like you wouldn't believe.
Mm.
But the thing is, I didn't know. I wasn't privy to any of that. My background wasn't an accountant.
So an interesting point you made. When you went back to the office, once you'd given up the used car business, did the team all just go back to normal behave, or did you have to make some team changes?
Massive team changes. I changed it up because it was... I was
because you don't want the kind of person in a business where you've got to keep an eye on them.
No, like, but sometimes you have to be. You have to be that person. I don't like to rule by fear. There's nothing worse than that. I'm not that person. But if things aren't going right and things aren't being done, sometimes you just need to do what you have to do to get out of the whatever. I was going to swear then.
So you had eight members of your team in the office back then. How many of them are still with you?
One.
Okay. And...
But that was over time. I didn't so go straight in there, all guns blazing, off you go.
No, because that would collapse the business overnight.
Absolutely. Naturally, people went because it was like, oh, there's a bit too much pressure now.
You like came this. Back and then the culture started to evolve.
The culture started to evolve.
And then that's right. Some people didn't fit anymore and then completely. They probably excluded themselves.
100%.
I've noticed that in many businesses, actually, including ours at points. All right, yeah, that makes a lot of sense. And actually, it's you know, sometimes, you know, businesses do try stuff and it doesn't work out, and then they've got to take a few steps back. And
we identified very, very, over those 18 months, nearly 2 years, it was great while it lasted, but it wasn't for us. Use cars, leave it up to the car shop and all those lads, let them crack on. Focus on what we know. Mm. We know leasing. That's our bread and butter, and let's focus on that. Finance and leasing is where it's at, and that's what we did. So we made a lot of changes, and then I had to then start recruiting to get some good people in. I had to bring culture in. So I had to bring a certain thing. I had to bring fun into the workplace. Mm. That's difficult, because when you've made a lot of losses, the whole idea is that you need to make profit because you want the business to survive. Cash is obviously king. So constantly looking at the cash flow at any given point, worrying about when you've got those worries of how are we going to pay the team? How are we going to pay the advertising? Mm. But keeping that smile as you walk into the office and, oh, everything all right, Scott? Yeah. But deep down, you're crying because you just think, Where are we going to be? That's difficult.
You know what? I think myself included, and so many business owners I've spoken to, they've all been there. It's this financial anxiety that underpins everything. And even when you've got a lot of cash in the business, you always still feel vulnerable. Yeah. And I think if you could sum up like what it's like to be a small business owner, it's people become self-employed because they want to be in control of their destiny.
Yeah.
But then the ironic thing is when people go from being self-employed to being a business owner where their destiny is in the hands of everyone else, like to some extent you can still control it. You can set the culture in the business. You can create the strategy, but you're still relying on members of your team, to be honest. You're still relying on members of the team to come through for you. You're still relying on certain things in your business to work out some way. Mm. But actually there's so much stuff that your business... It's like a boat or a ship in a sea where there's a storm going on.
Absolutely.
And there's so many things that can happen to you that are outside of your control.
Absolutely, yeah.
And I think that would pretty much summarise how a business owner feels.
I say that same metaphor. I say exactly that to the team, literally on a daily, if not weekly basis, that we're in a ship and we can. It's down to us to control it, not me. We all steer the ship in a different route. This asset finance that we're going into now, you know, we're going into that because we can see that there's a demand and there's a need for that. We don't know what that's going to be like. That may not take off. It may take off, but we have to steer the ship in the right way. We're not governed by, we're not a PLC. We haven't got ties. We haven't got, put it this way, we do a lot of LinkedIn. We do a lot of social media videos. Something that I've got the team to do. Very tough sell to do that. Speaking to a few of the car dealerships.
How did you sell it?
If you don't do it, you're sacked. No, I didn't really say that.
The beatings will continue until morale improves. Beatings,
yeah. Just sort of said, look, let's do it. And I just realised that when we started doing it, I didn't. I just said, come on, just do it. And the videos were pretty poor. So I thought, I need to take the mantle here. I need to do it myself. If I can lead by example and do it, then hopefully the team will follow. And yeah, it's been tough. Yeah, especially, you know, coming out of COVID, the team didn't really want to jump on a video and say, oh yeah, it's all going well, where the world's like on its knees. You know, you have to have things to talk about. But it's been going well, and it's been a bit of a slog. You know, it's we're starting to see some of the results now. And, you know, we get times where someone rang up yesterday and said, oh, I've seen one of Scott's videos or Ryan's videos. And it's great. But equally, we're quite controversial. So we can wind up people. We have been told to calm things down from funders. Mm-hmm. Because about the fake offers, we've sort of not named names, but said certain things. So we've had to be quite careful, but
it
works.
The joys of being associated with the FCA.
Absolutely. But it works. I think the whole thing for me is to lift the lid off of the barn that we've got, the barn conversion that we've got, because it's a small office, and it's lifting the lid off to see the team, see our personalities, see what we're about. And that's the whole thing. It's different in a dealership, because you could come and see me in a dealership. We can shake hands, sit down, have a coffee. We can get to know each other quite well. But doing what we do, it's all online. You haven't got that interaction. Yes, it can be over the phone. But if you see me do a video or you've seen me on LinkedIn, you sort of understand who I am. And you sort of get to know me more than I sort of know you, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
And I've had this before where customer has rang up and they're speaking to me like, I've known them for years. I've got a clue who this person is. But they're so friendly because they've seen me do some videos. And
well, it's part of the conversion process. Like, you know, if you can get your marketing to a point where when someone turns up to buy something from you, they're already sold.
Yeah.
Then that's the ideal situation. But it's something a lot of businesses still aren't doing. Like, you know, a lot of people say social media is free. It's really not. The most basic tools you need for social media do cost stuff. If you want to keep it going consistently, really you need a team to help you with it. Not a massive team, not an expensive team, but you do need some support.
Yeah, you're right, because we're doing that at the moment, and we've identified there's a couple of members of the team that just aren't comfortable just doing videos. They're not comfortable talking about themselves. They're not themselves on social media, which is fine. You know, I get it. I'm not going to force anyone to, you know, sort of tell the camera what they've been up to and their personal lives. So we've had to utilize video in a way in which I now edit their videos. It's very corporate feel. We've got like little intro, little outro. We talk about the products that we offer. We talk about all sorts of different things. We've started to do that now, and that's really worked, and that's taken off. And they love it because they're talking about what they do. They're not talking about themselves. And it's great. It's great. But it's just coming up with new ideas. Never stand still, I think, is the key. Never sort of think, right, okay, well, yeah, it's all going well. I'm going to go and play golf. And that's that. And, you know, the work-life balance. And I can go on holiday for a month in a villa in Spain. Those days aren't here. They're not here at the moment. We just have to work very hard. And I think this year has probably been the hardest year, I can safely say, for the business. It's It's the hardest year for grind, for working so bloody hard. It just hasn't been easy. You know, just we had Brexit, that sort of hit us a little bit. It wasn't too bad. But then COVID, just that whirlwind there, that started to get a little bit better towards when things start to, you know, things start to improve. And then lo and behold, we had Ukraine, that awful thing that happened that's still going on to this day. No one knew that half of the parts come out of Ukraine.
Oh, really? Yeah.
You know, no one knew. So all of a sudden, there's massive delays. So to get the new Range Rover back then, the new Range Rover Sport, was 3.5 years.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Well, for a business, as we sort of just mentioned earlier, the business gets paid when the car gets delivered because we invoice the finance company. Well, if that car's not getting delivered for 3.5 years, there's no income. So we're just taking orders.
Yeah.
Do you see what I mean? It's just, it's so difficult. So then you've got the difficulty of managing the cash flow.
Funding it for that period of time. Absolutely. Yeah.
And trying to find ways. And I had something recently where, and I'm not going to say any names, but just where you think things are going really well, where you think, actually, you know, this is going really well. Now I want to start to look at other things. You then find cracks and you then realise that things aren't being done the way you thought they were done.
A slippage, I guess. Yeah,
customers weren't being called, but you were told they were. Things like this, and you think, my God, it's business. We're losing business from the most silliest things. So then I've just had to go back into the business, which I've always been in the business.
Yeah.
The pivotal point, I think, for me was that in the office, I was always out the back. So we've got like a glass partition. I had that office all out on the back. The team can come and see me in the, you know, the usual thing. I let the team do it to get on with it. But I didn't want any of that over the years. And just before COVID, I think it was just actually after COVID, I said, right, I'm coming in to the sales office. So now I sit with the sales team. I sit literally shoulder to shoulder with the sales lads. And we work solely as a team. That back office is only used for video and client meetings. That's it. You cannot, this day and age, separate yourself away from the team.
I guess I gave you a tour of my office and how I'm separated from the team, actually.
But you're closer. Yeah. Your door's open. That's the difference.
And to be fair, a lot of the time, I do think about actually just moving into the main office with everyone else. It's just...
I tried it. And it was amazing, the results that I got, because it gave me the buzz. And then I then started to pick up some inquiries and run with the inquiries myself. And then to see how that sort of took. And at the moment, we're going through a lot of training with a new member of the team. And I'm doing the training myself with her. So we're going through, and that's great because we've been doing it a long time, but it started with me picking up the phone and speaking to the customers. I'd find it very difficult to be constantly in sales now because of the operation of the business and what we're trying to achieve. But it's how you enforce that culture. It's how you get everyone on the same page. We have things every month now, the top sales people, the top performers, they get to spin the wheel. We call it Wheel of Fortune. They call it Wheel of Misfortune because there's certain prizes on there that they don't particularly like. But that has taken, we did that every single week before COVID. COVID hit, we was all in a bit of a bad place. We all started trading again, but it sort of just fell to the wayside. We didn't do that. And those were the things that we were missing, going out as a team, doing things. And sometimes that's very difficult to go out as a team. You probably experience this, the same as I'm experiencing this. If someone says, right, are we going for a beer, Scott, Wednesday? I can't because I've got my boys. And it's very difficult to do that. But what we can do is that we can all get together on a Friday. We all finish at 5, so we close at 4.
Yeah.
So 4 till 5, we'll get a couple of drinks in, we'll have a chat. That's working really well. But this spin the wheel is something that we've done. Gets the team together. We have a bit of a laugh. We spin the wheel. And if the worst case, someone has to dance in front of the team, it's a bit of a laugh.
Yeah.
We film it, edit it, get it onto LinkedIn. And we've got a bit of a following.
I thought I'm going to check these out.
Yeah, we've got a bit of a following. So it's good for our YouTube channel. But it got to a point where we used to do it every week, but it got too much. So we did do it every month now. And it's great for the team. But now if we miss, we haven't missed one all year, but if we do miss one, I was getting emails coming saying, where's it spin the wheel? I've been waiting. Because it drops at the same time. It's about 5-6 o'clock on a Friday it drops at the last day of the month. So, but no, the team is what it's all about. That is the key to the whole business. I've got team members there that have been with me for 10, 11 years, all the way through. And they know what we're trying to achieve. And it's all about the team. It really is.
Okay, amazing. Scott, you know what? So this has been really insightful. And I think just before we wrap it up, if you could just maybe answer this question, like if you were giving a bit of advice to someone starting out in business, what would it be?
My advice would be to work hard. Work hard. And what I mean by that is not 24/7, you know, all the hours God sends, but just really put in that effort. Because the effort that goes in at the beginning, you're gonna reap the rewards at the end. And the biggest thing that I would say, don't take no for an answer. So if someone says to you can't do it, you bloody can.
That's absolutely amazing. And finally, if someone wants to get hold of you after watching this podcast or listening to it, how would they do that?
LinkedIn. Yeah, follow me on LinkedIn. You'll see all the videos that we do with the team and everything else on there. Email me as well, scott@silverstoneleasing.com. And just follow me on the socials as well.
Okay, absolutely amazing. Scott, thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
And everyone, you've been watching the Unrelenting Drive podcast, and be sure to stay tuned for future episodes.